So we are ready to have a very caffeinated session here, high energy. And the topic is very exciting for all of us, and it is something that is being talked about right now. So the idea is takfiriism, and how do we tackle takfiriism? So with that, I'm going to ask the panel over here, which needs no introduction. Imam Muhammad Al-Asi is well known to all of us, and he has been at the forefront of Muslim and Islamic struggle in America for over 30 years. And amazing resume that he has, and obviously, you know, being involved in so many things, and alhamdulillah, you know, it's a pleasure to have him here. And also on the other hand, alhamdulillah, we have Haj Ali Barakat, who has been in service of many communities and has been involved in so many Islamic movements and organizations as an advisor, counselor, leader in many ways, you know. So alhamdulillah, we have his expertise on many of the issues also. So I'm going to, this is going to be very simple and interactive session. I'll just ask the speakers, you know, just to explain a little bit regarding takfiriism first, and then I'll open it for the floor to ask questions. We have two volunteers, one on the men's side and one on the ladies' side, who have microphones. So if you want to ask any question, you can raise your hand. When the mic comes to you, inshallah, please speak in the mic clearly and audibly so that we can listen to the question and we can answer it. So at first, I would now like to give over the mic to Imam Asi and ask him to introduce this new concept, or this new idea of takfiriism that has hit the Muslim world so hard.
How many minutes do I have?
Go ahead.
Okay, then you can stop me when you think I went over time. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف المرسلين خاتم النبيين رحمة الله للعالمين سيدنا ومولانا وحبيبنا وعزيزنا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'd like to extend my appreciation to each one of you for making the effort to be here. And I just beg you to listen carefully. That's all I'm asking you. Human nature is, you know, someone is speaking and there may be a couple of sentences that are not understood, or a couple of sentences that may have a couple of meanings, different meanings, and your mind goes off to try to understand those couple of sentences, and then I'm speaking on and trying to explain another idea, and then you don't catch that, and so you lag behind, and that creates a little issue. So it may be, if you do have some things that have to be clarified, the moderator just said this is an interactive session, so you can make a quick mental remark or a quick mental reference to it, or if you have a pencil and paper, just jot down something so that you don't lose a connection with what I'm going to try to say. Obviously, the issue of takfir, and that means basically one Muslim saying to another Muslim, you're a kafir. This issue has a couple of sides to it that I'm concerned with. The first one is what you may call a theological or a doctrinal issue. And the second one is an ideological and political issue. And these two sides have to be made crystal clear in everyone's mind, because I say to you that our enemy is not those who are pronouncing takfir against other Muslims. Obviously, if they put themselves in an antagonistic position, you can consider them enemies. But before that, our major enemy is our ignorance. That's our major enemy. Now, if you care to go to the concordance of the Quran and look up how many times the word kufr and its derivatives, because you have nouns and you have verbs that are derived from the word kufr or kafara, if you care to count them, they are in the hundreds. This is a word that appears in the Quran with its many extractions hundreds of times. So no one can say this is, you know, some minor terminology in the Quran. It's a major terminology. Just like iman is a major word with all its extractions or derivatives, the same way with kufr. And we, in our Islamic history, we've had bouts. In the different cycles of history, we had individuals and we had movements, so to speak, that clung to this word, kufr, in the sense that they would use it against those who they disagree with. And the first time this appeared was during the time that Imam Ali ruled as the decision maker of the Muslims. And this was known as the phenomenon of Al-Khawarij. We had it in our history. And as I said, later on in our history, we've had similar recurrences of the same phenomenon. Some Muslims standing up in public, accusing other Muslims of being kafirs. Then we come, this, we've lived with this, but unfortunately we haven't saturated our minds with the correct information that would serve as an immune component to us, so that when it occurs again, we have immunity. We'll know how to deal with it. But when it reoccurs, it happens at a time when we don't have immunity. And so it takes its toll. Many of us get killed. Many of us gets trapped into its propaganda. And it basically results in the hemorrhage of the Islamic potential all over the world. There's a lot of details here, and I am told that this is an interactive session, so I'm going to transition from the historical, from the time Imam Ali had to deal, alayhi salam, had to deal with this phenomenon, and he dealt with it in a very mature way. I have some quotes here. I don't know if I'll leave them. Someone's going to ask some questions about this. But there are some quotes that even if you have Muslims who are saying you're a kafir, you don't treat them with the same mentality and the same approach. إِخْوَانُهُمْ إِخْوَانُنَا بَغَوْ عَلَيْنَا. In his words, in the Imam's words, they are our brothers who transgress against us. This takes a healthy dose of tolerance, of maturity, of inclusiveness to deal with these types of individuals. You can open your eyes and ears, tune in to what's being said today by some, not everyone, by some who are taking issue with these takfiris, and you will realize that they are not at the level indicative of the Imam's statements. He was asked once, are they kafirs? The Khawarij, are they kafirs? He said, min al kufri farru. They ran away from kufr. He was asked, are they munafiqs? His reply, there's a couple of narratives here. One of them says, طلبوا الحق فأخطأوه. They were in pursuit of الحق, but they misled themselves. They misdirected themselves away from it. But all of these statements, whatever they are, you know, we will not, the Imam was speaking to them, we will not initiate hostilities against you unless you initiate hostilities against us, etc. So you can take those guidelines from those times and place them in our context today. Today we have a new crop of takfiris who have right now been supported with finances, with weapons, with logistics, with political means, with military means, and all of this, and they're wreaking havoc. You can see this is in the headlines, it's all over the place, particularly in the two countries, Iraq and Syria. You can see what's happening. Now we come from the theological and the doctrinary, historical part of it, to the current issues that we have. We have today these people who come under different labels. You can't even count right now. They've been breeding different labels in the past few years. That you know, they're new. I mean, I don't know, maybe 100, 150, 200 labels that they have, but they all come under that general description that their first concern now is to kill the other Muslim. How do they kill the other Muslim? They use the word kufr, that word that's mentioned so many times in the guiding Quran. They take that and they say, look, this word rationalizes, it explains to us and to everyone why we have a license to kill and to kill the other Muslim. They're not concerned with the Zionist usurpers of the Holy Land. They are not concerned with oppressive, despotic rulers. They're just concerned with the average other Muslim who disagrees with them on what? On minor, you may say, tangential issues, such as if you go to a mausoleum of an imam or a Sufi or a shaheed or something like that, and say this is a bid'ah, and because this is a major bid'ah, it has entered into the sphere of kufr, and they extend this type of reasoning to make a Muslim a kafir. Now, the word kufr, and here's where, if you've been warming up, here's where I want you to concentrate your mind. The word kufr in the Quran, there's something called tahrir al-mustalah. We have terminologies in the Quran that have, throughout the ages, they have atrophied. Certain words in the Quran have atrophied. They no longer carry with them the vitality that belonged to the generation of Islamic self-determination. It's no longer there. I'll take a word that maybe you can understand what I'm saying more. Take the word mu'min. You're very familiar with that word, I am sure. And when you use it in today's language, when we speak about a mu'min, we are basically speaking about a believer. And I dare step forward and say this is a mistake with bloody results. A linguistic mistake with military mayhem. The word mu'min is not a believer. The word kafir is not a non-believer. The problem we are suffering from, obviously there's a military problem out there, it's very serious. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of innocent people have been killed because of the massacres and the bloodletting, the bloodbath in Syria and in Iraq and in other places. You know, it's spreading, it's metastasizing all over the place, just like cancer. In Africa, in North Africa, in the Arabian Peninsula, in South Asia, in Southeast Asia, all over the place. Whoever disagrees with that petro-finance trend that cloaks itself in Islam and Iman, the word kufr, before the Quran was revealed, it was a word in the language. The Arabic speaking people used to use the word kafara, and they used to call a farmer a kafir. There's nothing negative about that. Oh, the kafir is out in his field. It's just a neutral word. Nothing. No, just a word. But then when the Quran was revealed, the word itself gained what is called a shar'i meaning. It went from an organic linguistic collection of letters, and those letters now had what you may say an Islamic meaning. Because the fact of the matter is, kufr is disguising or covering the obvious. And the obvious in our human nature and in our human intellect, the obvious should be and is Allah's supremacy and Allah's authority. This is ingrained into the existence and the essence of life and things. But there are powers, establishments, institutions in the world that want to hide, omit, cover this fact. That becomes kufr. And kufr is, when this takes place, this is in the realm of what in today's usage of words is called ideology. Kufr is an ideological component. So when people who have like a Marxist or a capitalist or a communist theory or ideology, what do these theories and ideologies do? They either deny Allah and His authority and power, or they trivialize Allah's power and authority in such a way that, as far as you're concerned, it's no longer obvious. It's no longer palpable. It's no longer part of your psychology or your mentality. That is what kufr is. And if you follow some of the ayat in the Quran, like an ayah that says in Surah Al-Kahf, وَقُلِ الْحَقُّ مِنْ رَبِّكُمْ فَمَنْ شَاءَ فَلْيُؤْمِنْ وَمَنْ شَاءَ فَلْيَكْفُرْ. And say, الْحَقُّ is from your sustainer. Therefore, whoever wants to commit themselves to Allah's power and authority may do so. And whoever wants to deny Allah's power and authority may do so. This is not one of these ayahs that is subject to some type of ta'wil. It is one of the muhkam ayat the meaning jumps out at you, which is freedom of belief, or freedom of conviction, or freedom of thought, or freedom of theory and ideology. Allah Jalla wa Ala guaranteed every human being in this world that freedom. Even the freedom to become a kafir. In the general description of humanity, وَلَقَدْ كَرَّمْنَا بَنِي آدَمُ وَحَمَلْنَاهُمْ فِي الْبَرِّ وَالْبَحْرِ وَرَزَقْنَاهُمْ, to the end of the ayah. Within this honoring of the descendants of Adam is the freedom to cling to Allah's authority and power, or to reject Allah's authority and power. There's another ayah in the Quran. You know, I want you to follow this very closely. وقال الذين كفروا لرسلهم لنخرجنكم من أرضنا أو لتعودن في ملتنا فأوحى إليهم ربهم لنهلكن الظالمين. This ayah is saying, those who are ideological, I have to say this because I have to clarify what the word means. Those who are ideologically kafirs said to their messengers, we will expel you from our country, from our territory, from our land, from our jurisdiction, or you may return to our millah. So Allah revealed to His Rusul, to His messengers, we will indeed destroy al-zalimin. Didn't say al-kafirin. The beginning of the ayah says, وَقَالَ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا لِرُسُولِهِمْ. So why did Allah subhanahu, why did He end the ayah not saying, لَنُهْلِكَنَّ الْكَافِرِينَ? That's not the way the ayah ended. It says, فَأَوْحَى إِلَيْهِمْ رَبُّهُمْ لَنُهْلِكَنَّ الظَّالِمِينَ. In the midst of what we have today, it's a hodgepodge, a weird collection of individuals who have been trapped by this takfiri phenomenon. Simply because, as I said at the beginning, our enemy is our ignorance. That's enemy number one. We don't know who a kafir is. And then when we want to try to use the word, we use it against the wrong people with the wrong meaning and the wrong application. That's what we're doing. We're guilty of this. I'm not living in an ivory tower somewhere. Whether you like it or not, it's all part of what's happening to us. What's happening in the Muslim realm from Eastern Asia to Western Africa, that mass of what's happening inside that mass of Muslims, I mean, it's only a person who is in a runaway psychology who says, well, you know, it doesn't concern me. No, it does. It's part of us, part of what's going on in all of this major scheme. When they speak about ISIS, when they speak about Daesh, when they speak about these types, they're speaking about who? They're speaking about ignorant Muslims who are the foot soldiers of a shaitani plan, behind which there is the CIA, Mossad, MI6, intelligence services from the regional governments in that general area. All of them came together, and behind the scenes, these are ISIS. But we are led to believe, because the media functions according to their national interests. So the media tells us the victims, these simpleton Muslims, or these misguided Muslims, or these indirectly recruited Muslims, how do they recruit them? They use the internet. These poor Muslims, they go online, some of them feel guilty. They were drunkards just last year, or they were womanizers up until last week, and their conscience caught up with them. Said, oh my God, I've been a bad person. I have to make up for this. They go online, they see this site, fantastic. It draws them in emotionally. They say, this is how I'm going to redeem myself. I'm going there. And so they begin trickling in from all over the world. 80 nationalities or more in Syria itself. To do what?
Yeah, okay, I got the signal.
Okay, thank you so much. I ran out of time. Jazakallah khair.
Salawat.
So we can get more clarification on the subject and many aspects of it from the audience. So if people right now want to open it for the audience right now, if they want to ask any questions, right, please raise your hands. We have two volunteers here, one on the men's side, one on the ladies' side, you know. So please ask the questions over here. There's one question over there, if you can ask the question. And before you do, just one statement I'll get from Haj Ali Barakat, right? Make clarification. So when we, for example, when CNN says takfiris, or when, for example, Fox says, takfiri, or when we're saying takfiri, what do you think we mean, Haj Ali Barakat?
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وعلى محمد. Thank you so much for your analogy about what takfir is. But I think, with due respect to the opinion that I heard, we don't have the luxury of talking about this in that fashion anymore. Our life is in danger. Our deen is in danger. Our countries are in danger. Our women are in danger. Our families, our values. Islam by itself is in danger. I would urge you, before I answer the question for that was set before me from my brother, Sheikh Baig, what do they mean regardless? Regardless of what they mean. We have a problem, we need a solution. I don't need to go into the deep meaning what a takfir is in order to pinpoint the problem and how to solve it today. And let's not put our hand in the sand, our head in the sand. Why? Because we know that there are three factors to solve this problem. The historical factor, which my brother said, ignorance. Through the course of history, the amount of ignorance, and especially the structural ignorance, mounted generation after generation. Why? We refuse to tackle the truth. Simple. We don't want to tackle the truth. We are told by centuries to give sanctity and qadasa, to remove symbols that they do not deserve it. We are not going to learn from history. We don't want to be objective. This is the historical factor. The school of thought of Bani Umayyah that produced itself in our century in the ideology of Wahhabism. What does it state? You either think like me or you shall be killed. And if you think like me, you will go to Al-Jannah. If you don't think like me, I will kill you, I will go to Al-Jannah by killing you. The problem is, unanimously among all the school of thoughts in Islam, you cannot kill a Muslim who declared his Shahada. You cannot kill a non-Muslim who refused the Shahada. You cannot kill any innocent soul, period. This is well known. The second factor we need to address, the political issue. The dominant power in the world that wants to conquer our deen and separate us, they use this problem as a fertile soil to create divisions. So who created Jabhat al-Nusra? Who created ISIS? Who created al-Fikr al-Takfiri? The ideology. Who created Wahhabism? If you want to know who created Daesh, don't refer to me. I refer you to General Clark. It is on the YouTube. Read the interview of CNN with General Clark. And he will tell you exactly when and it was and how, what was the finance of what's have you. The third factor that we need to address is debate, dialogue, and education among the school of thoughts of the Muslims. And particularly we as Muslim Americans living in the United States, I want to raise the question to share with you and with my brothers and with my respected ulama, what do we do? We as Muslim Americans, what do? Especially in conferences like that, what do? Do we theorize? Do we analyze? No, it's not enough. I believe, humbly speaking, based on my humble experience, we need to go out there and we need to speak. We need, as American Muslim, to talk. We shall not and will not and cannot afford to let these takfiris hijack our deen. You know why? Because we will pay the price. Like we are paying the price right now. It is not the time where we sit and do our salat and tasbih and not to get involved. We need to go to the media. We need to go to their media because we lack our own media and we lack the unity, I understand. But we have generations that can communicate and talk and raise voices. We have the ability and the authority and the liberty to organize, to make congregations, to invite the CNN to speak our word and to say we as Muslim Americans, we condemn these acts. And we condemn the power that supported them. We condemn financing what we call moderate opposition in Syria. I'll give you a simple example. Zinki. They call it Zinki Din or group. Imad al-Din Zinki group. This group, notorious killers. I'm not saying that, it's well known. They have their own videos. The United States supported them and counted them as what? Moderate opposition. Until we saw all in the videos what they have done to the 13-year-old boy, Palestinian boy who was injured, took him out of the hospital and butchered him on the news. And finally, our government decided to cut the support. We are not debating. We don't see anyone to raise our voice. We don't see our ulama on the CNN news. We don't see anyone buying air times to speak. We've got a guy who is a external minister of Saudi Arabia running from one network to another, lies after lies after lies, and nobody is opposing him. And what do? We talk about historical differences between Sunni and Shia. We want to fly and achieve Al-Hurfan, and we are not addressing our problem. I urge you to raise your voice as a Muslim American. We condemn the foreign policy in supporting terrorism. We need to make a political group lobby, a Muslim lobby in the United States will enforce and talk to the congressmen to cut ties with Turkey if they keep opening the borders for all these terrorists to come. We need ulama to make a debatable issue with other ulama from another school of thought to educate the youth that my brother talked about. They want to redeem themselves because they were sinners by attending these groups. But I can tell you the problem is much bigger than that. The problem is we have a school of thought that's refusing to talk. and refusing to debate. And if we are not very active in creating an atmosphere where we could affect the generation to debate, the problem will be bigger. And the third element I want to tell you, and I end this discussion for question and answer, we have no choice but to defend ourselves. Humbly speaking, from my own simple, humble responsibility, I am telling you, do not underestimate in your homes, in your schools. You need to defend yourself. You need to open your eyes. The number of Muslims that were killed by those takfiris, by great numbers, greater than the numbers of the non-Muslims. They don't differentiate. They are killing their own supporters. The problem is, what do we do? We cannot be silent. Why? Because in the Middle East, on the battleground, they are losing, they are going to the West. When they do terrorist acts in the West, the general public and the media will come and blame you and me. And they are not blaming us because we are silent. And we are a victim. So let's not victimize ourselves. At the end of this discussion, Imam Ali alayhi salam, how did he deal with Al-Khawarij? Did he fight them without a debate first? No, there were 60,000. Based on the debate and the conversation he had with them, they turned into what? Less. Into 40,000, into another 20,000. Why? Al-Imam Ali debated them. We need our ulama to go on the news. We need to buy airtimes. We need to go out to the decision maker in the foreign policy and to tell them the perpetrators are not the one who are only carrying the gun. The perpetrators are the one who are giving them the gun.
So, I have one question on this side, brother. Go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum. During the '80s, when Saddam Hussein had initiated the war of aggression, is it too close?
Yeah.
During the '80s, when Saddam Hussein had initiated the war of aggression against the Islamic Republic, I believe Imam Khomeini Rahmatullah Ali had quote a hadith that says, it is all right for brothers to have disagreement, but if you have a group that aggress against the other one, the Ummah supposed to side with the aggressed group and fight the aggressor. So that was that time. So today we have the Takfiris doing the same thing. Isn't it an opportunity for the Ummah to follow that same injunction to any of the members on the panel?
It's a very good question, but it's the ayat of the Quran, you know, that says that, you know, when there is dispute amongst two Muslims, and if one of them is found to be wrong, then it is the job of the rest of the Muslims to side with the one on the truth against the one who is wrong. So he's asking, you know, isn't it the job of the whole Ummah to turn against this sect and this school of thought that is saying that all the other parts of Islam are wrong, not even just Shia, but even the Sunnis. So, you want to answer that?
I mean, the answer is obvious. Muslims, I think, who understand, this is the key word, who understand. And I go back to my initial statement, our problem is our ignorance. وَمَا لَكُمْ لَا تُقَاتِلُونَ فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ وَالْمُسْتَضْعَفِينَ من الرجال والنساء والولدان الذين يقولون ربنا أخرجنا من هذه القرية الظالم أهلها واجعل لنا من لدنك وليا واجعل لنا من لدنك نصيرا. This is common sense. If we were just average committed Muslims, the question that you asked would be a common sense question and said, yeah, Muslims by their its Quranic, prophetic inclination are on the side of the victims of aggression. But the problem is, what do you do with generations and what do you do with a public mind? We have a public mind out here. I'm dealing with this public mind. And this public mind concerns us before it concerns anyone else. This public mind has so many gaps in it that our enemies, who understand us better than we understand ourselves, they come rushing in these gaps that we created for them. So it's about time that we at least begin to narrow and then to close these gaps and not give our enemies these opportunities. What do you do with, you know, some people in places that are deprived in the Muslim land? I don't want to name any geography. People who are deprived in a Muslim land, they know nothing about their Islam except they were born in an Islamic family, they were raised in a traditional Islam, they were engulfed with a cultural Islam, and then all of a sudden they are told, the government that you have doesn't represent you. And because you are Muslims, who's speaking to them? Those who have the money. And you know where the money is? In the Arabian Peninsula. They go out with their missionaries to all parts of the world, and they tell these people, whether they are thousands of miles away from their homeland or inside those homelands, they tell them, those who are governing over you are kafirs. And here's the money, here are the weapons, the logistics, everything you need. Here, take it and go and fight. Yeah, they accept. I mean, what information do they have to say no? What you are telling us is wrong. What information do they have? Have we been providing that information? Brother Ali, with all due respect, CNN and BBC and all of this, trash it. I tell you this because they will not give us the opportunity. If they know a person is an effective Muslim who's living his time and his days, who's bleeding with the Muslims, crying with the Muslims, sweating with the Muslims, you're going to give them the opportunity to come and speak to the public? And it says, we. Who are we? When I go, if I wanted to address CNN, assuming here, I write a letter to the manager or the producer, whoever at CNN, say, look, there's so much Islamophobia, there's so much, you know, nonsense being spoken about there, out here about Islam, and I would be given the opportunity, we should have the opportunity to address these misstatements and basically fabrications and lies. We, who are you? We what? Who's we? Is going to listen to an individual like me, but if we become a we, then they'll say, wait a minute, we have a constituency out here in the United States. We have some people who have their act together, and when they say we, there's a we out there, and we're going to have to give them the opportunity to speak. But short of that, what are we going to do? Unless we want to think on another level and have our own CNN, so to speak. What's wrong with that? We don't have enough courage, we don't have enough motivation to say, we can have a satellite station of our own. We can have a national TV station of our own. We're not dumb. Some of the best people around are Muslims. In technology, in science, in research, Muslims. We're not poor. We have resources. Of course, they're stealing our resources because they hoodwink us and they go in there and they do whatever they want to do. Yeah.
Salawat. Practical step in answering your practical step. If we are to wait to have our own CNN network, it might take 1 year or 20 years. I am an optimistic person. If we move every 20 years one step, it's better than nothing. But when we don't have our own CNN station, the question, what do we do? Yes, we have a lot of people, capable people. We have doctors, we have engineers, we have lawyers, we have excellent, progressive, prosperous Muslim American communities in the United States where their identity and prosperity and security is in danger. It is time to get involved. I want everybody to get involved. Because right now, if we don't have our CNN, we have our own social network. Don't tell me that the Saudi Arabia decision to attack Yemen, that we can be silent and we cannot move and mobilize 2,000 to 5,000 Muslim Americans in front of the Saudi embassy to say, stop this nonsense violent war. And it didn't happen. Why it didn't happen? Because everybody is doing, or most of us is doing, what most of the people did during the Khuruj of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. What did they do? What did they say? We have nothing to do with it. I have an organization I worked with for 20 years. Single-handedly I was voted out because they don't want to get involved. I said, let's write a letter about Ashura. Let's buy our own time. Don't tell me you cannot buy your own time. You have your money in the United States. You could buy the time. You could buy the space. You could buy the space on the newspaper and put whatever you want. If we are in the Muslim Congress, 2,000 people here, together, we can gather in front of the Saudi embassy. And we could say to them, stop this nonsense war against the children of Yemen. We can talk, even if our talk is not heard. I was extremely impressed when I heard the sister yesterday with sister Be- with Maulana Beg, the sister, the American woman activist, who said, we went to the office of the senator, we stayed there. We stayed there and they had to listen to us. If you keep knocking at the door, they have no choice but to listen to you. For God's sake, in the election, nobody wants to sit with us. It is a big burden for any politician to sit with us. Why? Because we are not united. We are not politically aware. We are digging our own political, social, economic graves. Wake up, our brothers and sisters, wake up. I know one fact, in Lebanon, small little country, surrounded by more than 30 to 40,000 takfiris on the border of Syria. We had to make a painful decision and sacrifice our youth and our family and our resources to defend our own existence, and it cost 2,000 shaheed, and it worked. It worked. It produces results. We are not asking to go and take your arm and go as a Muslim American militia organization and fight them. No, all what we are saying, you can contribute by getting involved. You could tell Senator McCain, stop giving weapons to those criminals. You can educate the man. You could tell him now, when you sat with them, you sat with Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, you sat with him.
Questions here.
You want to say something? Or the Ghassan here, he was first. You know what I mean? I'm looking at your hands. I'll come to you. You know, hopefully, I'll just ask the panel here, right? Because there's so many people with their hands raised up. So if you can be like really direct in answering the question, go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum. I'll go straight to the point. We did initiate an organization about 3 years ago.
It's not on.
In 2014, we initiated a global alliance for terminating Al-Qaeda / ISIS. In June of this year, we had a conference in D.C. at the press club where we really denounced, we invited Bashar al-Assad's advisor and Hutayna Shaban and some other advisors from Iraq as well. The media was not with us, was against us. Even though we held in the press club, instead of really going for the theme of the conference, we were trying to criticize the people who founders of the conference. So we need really to go to our senators. We tried that as well. First question they ask, how many people in your community? How many people in your group? So this have to come from actually the grand scholars in the US, unite together, really create roster, how many, you know, how many Muslims they group, you know, what center by center. We need to really to coordinate nationwide, center by center, to really to be more effective. We're still working on it. We did not give up, actually. Our conference was very successful. We had from Al Jazeera to Press TV to C-SPAN repeated the conference about four days in a row. So we really, we need everybody to touch the plate and take action. It's not like on my shoulder. And we need this, we need this, the scholars to take really a role in supporting these efforts.
So there was just an announcement, you know, this is a group that was created, organized, that was created to fight against Al-Qaeda at that time, right? And obviously Al-Qaeda with the different faces that it has changed name. No, there. C-SPAN. But Imam Aliya, do you want to say something?
Yeah, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I would like to request Imam Asi. Thank you for your talk. Can you please shed some light about the recent developments between regarding the relationship between Zionism and Takfirism?
Zionism and Takfirism. Zionism.
I don't know if many of you are following the fast developing issues and the frantic communication efforts between the rulers in the Arabian Peninsula. Saudi Arabia right now has more or less revealed itself to the public. And then just closely behind it is the United Arab Emirates. These two have taken very serious steps in coordinating their policies towards basically the end goal is to defeat the 30 plus years of consolidation of an Islamic liberation effort to give the Palestinians their right in their own homeland. The Zionists have met with Saudi officials in occupied Palestine, in the United States, and in Saudi Arabia. The most notorious one, there's two Saudi personalities right now who have surfaced. They've come out and stood in front of the cameras and spoke their treacherous minds. One of them is Prince Turki Al-Faisal. This person was head of Saudi intelligence, their intelligence services, for more than 20 years. He was the Saudi ambassador to Britain for many years. After Bandar, the Saudi ambassador, left Washington, Turki Al-Faisal came to Washington and became ambassador to the United States for around 2 years or so. This person now has met with Israeli officials, and more than that, just last month, I guess it was, he went to the Munafiqeen's meeting in Paris. And he said, وَأَنَا أُرِيدُ إِسْقَاطَ النِّظَامِ. That's one of the slogans that in quote-unquote the Arab Spring, الشَّعْبُ يُرِيدُ إِسْقَاطَ النِّظَامِ. Well, the Iranians in their Persian language who were there, these munafiqeen, were saying it in Arabic, الشَّعْبُ يُرِيدُ إِسْقَاطَ النِّظَامِ. And he said, after listening to them from the podium, وَأَنَا أُرِيدُ إِسْقَاطَ النِّظَامِ. And I too want the downfall of the regime. That's in reference to the only independent and the only free Islamic society that all the Muslims have in the world. That's in reference to his neighboring country, Iran. So this person has come out on the record, and there's another general, he's an ex-general, retired from the military, by the name of Anwar Ishqi. He also has been meeting with Israeli officials. He came to one of the think tanks in Washington, D.C. last year and the year before, met with high-ranking Israeli officials, and spoke to these attendees there, basically saying that there's a lot that we have in common, meaning the Saudis and the Israelis. And then from there, just last month, he went on a visit with his entourage. They went to occupied Palestine. They met with Israeli officials in the occupied territories. And so, you know, they no longer can hide themselves. You and I probably knew that this has been going on for a long time behind the scenes. Even some of the information that has surfaced recently, because issues like this have become hot topics. And then one of the information pieces that came out a month or so ago disclosed that the first Minister of Defense that the Saudi government had was treated in an Israeli hospital many decades ago and was released. They didn't say whether he was cured or not in this news item. And then the second individual who was treated in an Israeli hospital was the late King Fahd. Went to Israel, was treated there by an Israeli medical team, and he thanked them for the treatment and the hospitality and all of this. So this thing has been going on, but the momentum has been picking up. If it's not for the successes of the consolidated effort to break the back of this conspiracy, this is a Saudi, Israeli, American, British conspiracy. This is the backbone of the conspiracy. There are other contributors to it, but that's the backbone of it. And that backbone is being broken in Syria and in Iraq, and they're going haywire. They don't know what to do. The Saudis looked at this JCPOA, the joint that was signed between the Islamic Republic and the United States. They said the United States now is really not in favor of us the way it used to be. And they may stab us in the back. Look what they did to Saddam. Look what they did to in Libya. Look what they're doing. So our turn is coming up. We got to look for someone to protect us. And who do they go to? أشد الناس عداوة للذين آمنوا. That's the one they go to.
Maulana, also there is one more dimension. There is a military cooperation on the ground between the Israelis and the Takfiris militias. And in this cooperation, it's going on in Iraq and in Syria and in Yemen and in Libya. They have created a common military command. They have taken all the wounded Takfiris to their own hospitals. They are providing them with the military support, with the expertise. They are providing them with weapons. It's well known. So I think, back to our issue, please, let us get involved. You could get involved in talking to your non-Muslims in your own school, in your own work, in your own community. Muslim Americans in the United States are the most successful community in the United States. We need to raise your voice. Just make your voice heard that we do not approve what those takfiris are doing. And the second thing is, we need debatable, good scholars that can debate the ideology of these takfiris. I followed Ayatollah Kamal Haidari for 2 years. He did a massive job, because they gave him Al-Kawthar radio and TV station in Shahr Ramadan, and it broadcasted his debates to Saudi Arabia. And I have seen the effects were tremendous. Why? Because the man brought the common sense. And he says, I am a Muslim, you are a Muslim. Don't call me a kafir, I'm not gonna call you a kafir, but come, let's talk. I am gonna go use your own source, your own resources. Me and you, I urge me and you to break this code of barrier between us and those people. Why? Because those people, they think it is haram for you to converse with you. I'm telling you, it happened to me personally. I met a couple of them in Berkeley, California, and when I was trying to reach them, they say, No, 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 we can't talk to you. What, you are a Rafidi, you are a Kafir. I said, what is that supposed to mean? I didn't know at that time what Rafidi means. They say you are a Nusayri. I don't know what Nusayri means at that time. I really didn't know. So I said, am I Muslim or not? He says, no, you are not. Anyway, it is haram to talk to you. I say, why? Because our ulama gave a fatwa. A fatwa from al-ulama. Do not talk to a follower of, do not talk to a Shia. Why? He has a tongue, he has a magic under his tongue. This is the ignorance that we need to break. And for us, let's go to our own house, because we need to clean our own stuff too. Rearrange your priorities. We should study history in order to deduce results how to deal with the present. We shouldn't study histories in order to rekindle al-fitan that took place in history. The whole story of Al-Quran about talking about issues and stories is to learn, to get the idea, to learn. You are not responsible for what happened thousands of years ago. The tragedy and the mistakes of our history belongs to the people who made it. But we are reading it. It's time for us to learn. How do we deal with it? Do not think other Muslims are your enemies. If they are a different school of thought than you. Even if you're right, and even if you think if you're right and they are wrong, do not say I'm not gonna talk. Do not say I'm not gonna debate. Do not say I'm not gonna invite. Do not say I'm not gonna eat. And most of all, do not say I'm not gonna pray with them. Because our A'imma told us the opposite. Because if you have the truth and you know what you're doing, then you walk tall and you talk and then you speak and then you defend. And it's important because we had no other choice. Otherwise, we will hurt. We will be hurt so bad, because even the president elections are running around the issue of hating Muslims. And I don't have to tell you the details. Let's find a creative way how to get involved to stop this phenomenon.
Brother Ali was next. Brother Ali, I'll be with you next. Oh, the sister side. All right, 1 minute, Brother Ali. I'm going to go to sisters first because I didn't see their hands. Go ahead. All right, go ahead. I'm going to take two questions together, right? So go ahead. You ask a question and, okay. Two sisters, go ahead. Ask the question.
Assalamu alaikum. Thank you very much. I guess this is more of a proposal rather than a question, but I mean, we always hear we need to do something, we need to say something, write a letter, but it's always like, okay, what are we going to do? So I guess my concern / proposal is, why doesn't Muslim Congress organize, as Imam Asi said, which is a great idea, like some kind of... like some kind of news station or something bigger. I mean, you can tell us, go talk to your coworkers. Let's be real. The American population is not a revolutionary population. Iranians, in my opinion, are revolutionary. Middle Easterns in general were more revolutionary than Americans are. Americans want to hear the truth, but they play by emotion. I mean, look at these commercials for adopting an animal. You see this, like, you know, dog with a broken leg, and Americans are in tears, and they're donating left and right. I mean, we need to, like, know the psychology behind how people in this nation react to the truth and how they perceive something to be truth and then plan based off of that. And so, I don't know, in my opinion, it's like, why don't we organize people who are social media experts, because the most impressionable people in this society are younger people, 20 to 30 or 40, whatever. And yeah, look at what happened on the app Snapchat. They had a story on Hajj, and there were people that were tweeting saying, oh, I'm converting, or I'm just reading about Islam. I mean, there are ways like this that you can spread a message. So yes, we need to be involved, but I think let's stop saying we need to talk, we need to do something, and let's say, okay, here's how. Sign up, set up a booth, bring pieces of paper, have people, you know, have an opportunity to sign up for something, and then we can go somewhere from there. And I know, like, there's a lot of students in this country, especially in my state, like, for example, Iranian students who are here on a visa, and they're scared to speak up, and I understand what they're saying, but deep down, I mean, these are people whose families were in the Iran and Iraq war, very vocal, but they want to find a different way, and I know that financially they would support groups like this if they're too scared to speak for now because of their visa status. So, sorry, that was a rant. But in general, yeah, please provide a specific plan and let's set a tangible goal. Next year, we're going to have a news agency or something that we can come together.
Thank you very much, sister. You see, as far as Muslim Congress is concerned, I can answer two things regarding that. If you don't receive email from Muslim Congress, you know, you should sign up for the email. There are many initiatives Muslim Congress already have. It has the Al-Quds Committee. This is to plan and organize protests for different occasions that have happened and to work with other people that I'm going to come to Brother Ali right now, you know, who's going to also speak about the things that he does, right? So inshallah, you know, there are things that we do in order to organize these type of protests. And the other thing is that, you know, there are, for example, sign up sheets for petitions that are initiated by Muslim Congress for many things that have happened. So inshallah, if you're not getting those emails, please sign up so that you can get the email and get involved. That should be your responsibility. So we are doing our part in trying to organize those things, and it's now the job of the people to actually get on board and become the supporters for it. One minute, I have one more sister over there. Go ahead, sister.
Assalamu alaikum. JazakAllah for taking the question. My question is, the major difference is that takfirism, if you take the ideology of takfirism, their problem is they blame Shias as idol worshippers. And how do we counter this ideology in the sense that now in media, if you see everywhere, there's 98% of global heritage that has been destroyed in Saudi Arabia. And offshoot from Saudi Arabia, now you have ISIS destroying Palmyra, Hathra, the statue of Buddha everywhere, and we can come in, you know, CNN. There could be one of the ways that we can infiltrate the media is through standing up along with the global heritage organizations to say we as well stand for heritage. And also, and question for Brother Hajj there, he was saying, why don't we organize a protest outside Saudi Embassy? I would like to say that there was a protest 1 month ago outside Saudi Embassy. There were 1,000 people present there, and alhamdulillah, you know, we marched to the White House, and it was pretty profound. You know, we distributed flyers saying Saudi ISIS are the same, only difference is the name. And we were also distributing water bottles with Imam Baqir alayhi salam saying love is religion and religion is love. And as we were speaking to regular American people, they were very impressed with that ideology, saying this is the legacy that we need to rebuild the Baqi. From that standpoint, you know, if everyone unites and for Al-Quds as well as for Baqi Day, then maybe we can have two counter, you know, Zionism as well as Takfirism, Wahhabism.
Right, so I think, you know, if you understand the question, I think, you know, you can make a comment on that.
Thank you, sister. May Allah bless you and inshallah reward you for the efforts that you made. I've known that there were some demonstration against the Yemen policy of Saudi Arabia and Yemen and in front of the Saudi embassy. But little bit much better than never, but it is not effective enough. The effective method is to be more vigilant and more responsive. There were only 1,000 people for a couple of days. The media did not catch it in the proper national coverage. It came on the news probably for 18 seconds. Okay, not on the national news, 18 seconds. No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is we need to have a political awareness among the youth. So I urge the youth to get involved. For example, this is an idea you could work on it from now. Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General of the United Nations, did something terrible. Right? He took the name of Saudi Arabia among the countries that are killing innocent children because he was subjected to pressure from Saudi Arabia. And he came openly
in the daylight saying, I had to do that because they pressured me to take the funds and we need the funds. And it passed by. Nobody said anything except some voices here and there. No, we could send thousands of emails and notes and WhatsApp notes and Facebook notes to Ban Ki-moon. They put pressure on him. We need to put pressure on him. They put pressure on him in a matter of batin. We need to put pressure on him on a matter of haq. And our voltage is still weak. I am here to discuss with you and to learn from you and learn from each other. How can our voltage be strong enough to make a change? We need to get involved in a way that we need to communicate, and we need our ulama to open their networks to another school of thought. We need every single school of thought to unite with us to expose this wrong, destructive ideology. I would like to see here on this panel, beside my beautiful brother, brotherhood over 30-something years, right? You don't want to know what would happen between me and Brother Asi when we debate. You don't want to see that atmosphere. There is no limits and there are no muharramats. But we know what we agree on. We are true good brothers, good activists, inshallah, for the sake of Allah. We need to have on this panel ulama from the Hanafi, from the Madhab al-Hanafi, from al-Madhab al-Maliki, from al-Madhab al-Shafi'i, from other school of thoughts, from other Islamic centers, because they are victims too. I don't want you to think that these takfiris are targeting only the Shia. If you look at the victims in Iraq, the number of the Sunnis that were killed by those killers by far greater than the number of the Shia. Facts, numbers speaks. What they are doing to the tribes who refuse them. Turkey has been supporting them for years. What they have done to Turkey in the airport. We need to make a networking open effort in order to stand united against these phenomena. Otherwise, the roof will fall on everyone. And we need to do it now. We cannot afford to wait on it. So, inshallah, as far as Muslim Congress, I urge the decision makers to get involved, other ulama, about this particular subject. Because if Allah in the Quran is telling us about Ahlul Kitab, the people of the book, قُلْ يَا أَهْلَ الْكِتَابِ تَعَالُوا إِلَىٰ كَلِمَةٍ سَوَاءٍ, let's come to a common ground or common word between us and the Ahlul Kitab. You mean to tell me we cannot have a common ground among us Muslim scholars? And even among the school of thoughts, the same school of thoughts, we would like other centers to come and get involved and get the youth involved and let the youth be heard. And I urge you to make it a top priority that we need to stand to tell the decision makers, the Pentagon, the Foreign Senate Committee, your senator, your local representative, we are Muslim Americans, we will not tolerate the takfiris behavior. And in doing so, it's not we only defending this country, we are defending our deen.
I just want to continue what you were saying, and then I'll ask my quick question. As Sister Zainab was talking about, we had a huge rally for the Babakhi organization, but I just want to explain to you that we have had five since October: Nimr, Zakzaki, Al-Quds, Yemen, and this Baqi. All of them, it has been about takfirism. Yemen has been involved. People have come from here. Ban Ki-moon, we demonstrated in front of the UN right after that statement. We had pledges, we had petitions reaching out to them. We have reached out to people from Ahl-e Sunnah. CARE New Jersey was the only organization that has supported us on this issue. There are some members of a group called United Against Saudi Oppression who are in this body right now. And if any of those people over here want to get involved with more activism, please contact us. If I could ask some of you to stand up, Ms. Mizbah Bhai, Zainab, Maria, if you can just stand up, and anybody else who's from the group, if you can meet us, we can help you out. I'm sorry. So, Mike, that is what I'm trying to say with regards to activism, and I thank you for your statements. We absolutely need this. We need more of that. Whatever help we can get in this issue, it is great. My question. Takfirism is essentially a Muslim telling another Muslim, you're a kafir. Wahhabism extends more beyond that in involving Jews and Christians also. So my question is, in this part of the world, do you think it is better or is better to involve the Wahhabi terminology also, especially because of the fact that we are, after a long time, we are finally getting the word Wahhabism into the news. The news media are using that and starting one more terminology with Salafis and Takfirism and all that. Will that create more confusion?
So, actually the question, if I understand it right, is the fact that, we have been trying to find hard to identify this group of people with a term, and that term is now catching on. Now, to add a new term of Takfiriism and to add a new term of Salafism is only going to cause confusion amongst the people here in trying to identify our enemy. So, any remarks on that, either of you,
Sure.
This is a very good question. Thank you. And for your effort and the effort of the sisters, give them loud salawat, please.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.
It is very important to clarify that the terms are interchangeable and interacting. Okay. Our problems mainly is not with the Salafis who did not choose a violent way to terminate you. There are Salafis out there, they did not choose violence. They disagree with you. They think you are misguided. They think you are a kafir. Openly, there are certain Salafis, they say, if you follow this school of thought, you are a kafir. But they pinpoint this description without pulling a gun against you. And we have no problem with that. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, even we go back into Surah Al-Kafirun. قُلْ يَا أَيُّهَا الْكَافِرُونَ لَا أَعْبُدُوا مَا تَعْبُدُوا Right? The rest of the ayah, لَكُمْ دِينَكُمْ وَالْيَدِينَ But that in itself does not give anyone the right to eliminate you and kill you. Our problem is with the statement of the jihadis, Salafis who graduated from the Wahhabism school of thought. If you listen to their literature, what do they say? It's not that we will defeat you, no. It is not that we will imprison you. No. We will eliminate you from the face of the earth. Yeah, I mean, wherever you are, we will follow you, and then we are not going to enslave you. We are not going to imprison you. We are going to butcher you. That is the mentality. That is the ideology. This ideology is associated with Wahhabism. Wahhabism. And we call them takfiris. Why? Because they associated the words with the violent actions. And it is very funny. You could use this debatable strong point. When they say, they come to Syria, my brother is from Syria. Would you testify that the Syrian people are Muslims or not? There are Muslims in Syria, right? Right. It is very funny when you get a guy from Shishan, Afghanistan, Tunisia, Saudi Arabia, all these, they are coming to Syria to say, we want to enforce the word of Allah and we want to establish Islam. And they come to a place where there are 7-8 mosques. They listen to Al-Adhan. What do you come there for? Islam is already there. There are people who are praying. There are people who are fasting. There are people who are going to Al-Hajj. No, they want to do it on their own terms. You agree with me? This is the problem that we have. This is the immediate danger that we have. And then Brother Ghassan said very important issue. We need
to identify the people who are financing them. And I raised the question last year and I raised it again. How did ISIS organization get hold of 53,000 Toyota brand new truck? Where did they get it? Did it come from the sky? 53,000 Toyota brand new car. And then, thanks to the Russians, I don't want to take any political attitude, but because the organization sent the letter to Toyota. Can you tell us who bought these cars? They did not respond, because we don't count. But when the Russians officially sent the letter to Toyota, they responded. And they brought the chassis number, and they traced the buying process. Saudi Arabia company in Riyadh was the largest number of Toyota was bought, and company in Qatar, and another company in United Arab Emirates. And these companies are well known, and they have licenses of export, and they work with the US, and they work with Europe, and they work with Asia. And until now, they are exporting, buying these trucks because it's ISIS' favorite trucks to mount guns on them. They just sent to Libya 3,000 new ones. You mean to tell me, my beloved Uncle Sam do not know about this? We need to speak the truth. We need to address the issue from its all totality. All what you need to do is do what you can. And Allah, inshallah, Allah will be with us and will be with you, inshallah, and will make this work prosperous, inshallah.
Okay, this will be the last one because we are over time already. So I'm going to give it to you. Go ahead, brother. You are raising your hands. I'm just going to let you.
Assalamu alaikum. The question of the panel is that, so since the past 240 years, the world has witnessed American atrocities within America against the Red Indians and throughout the world as well. There have been many movements. We've seen many human rights activists. We've seen the civil rights movement, yet the concept of the New World Order hasn't ceased to exist. America still is overpowering the entire world and is dictating its policies to the entire world. Do you think, the question is that us struggling or strategizing to become part of this system that has already proven its concept of New World Order, is that a good strategy? Or the strategy should be that we strive towards changing this very system of Taghut? Thank you.
He's asking, you know, if I'm right about this, you know, that over here, right, we see that there are people working in different directions, right? Some people are working the direction of trying to work with the system, you know, which we have known has proven to have deceived and betrayed everyone who worked with it. Or we try to actually change the whole system itself.
Right? Strive towards changing the system.
Grassroots movement, you know, trying to change the people and change the system. So which way should we head it? Should we work with the system or should we work to build a new system, of course?
Just to clarify, I mean the system of governance, the very constitution itself.
Loud salawat.
Since the constitution cannot be changed legally.
So loud salawat, please. With humble experience, from my humble experience, I could tell you we need to work on both. Because changing the system could be a long-term plan. I don't expect it to happen in one day. But I am a little bit alert when you say, should we be part of the system? Are we part of the system or not? You want to be practical? Let's face it, we come to the United States, we immigrated, we signed a document, we made an agreement, we will respect the law, we will participate. We are part of the system. We go to school, we get education, we get married, we work, we pay our taxes, we get involved. We vote on initiatives locally. This is the American way of life, inside, internally. We are part of it. So you are part of the system whether you like it or not. But you cannot say I cannot say to myself, oh, until I change the system, maybe I'll bring a solution to my problem. Everything is relative, brother. I want to be practical, and I'm not afraid to tell you. Even the oppressive foreign policy of the United States is not an issue of black and white. And let's be frank and practical and be open. The United States policy is a pragmatic policy. They will support you if it serves their interest. They will stand against you if it's against your interest. Okay? So at one point of time, there was a policy that did well, for example, in the Balkan areas, when the United States got involved in the war and stopped the massacres in Kosovo, regardless of the reasons. And none of the Muslims, except few, did something about it. But locally, in your local communities, you are not isolated from the system. You are part of the system. You occupy a space in the system. You work, you make money, you pay taxes, you have obligations, you have your civic rights, you have your civic obligations too. And I urge you, and I urge myself to do it for the fullest. Because if you do it for the fullest, then the people will say, ha, this is a Muslim American I could follow. And it's an excellent way for your own kids and generation to succeed and to prosper. They would resolve the problem of identity, the problem of assimilation, the problem of peer pressure. No, I think we should do it simultaneously, brother. I hope I answered the question.
Thank you.
Sorry, I have to take... I
would like to fine tune. This is a good question, and it pops up very regularly. Do we work with the system? Do we work against the system? We happen to be in a country that guarantees freedom of expression. What we are saying right now, if we were transfixed into another country, let's say one of our countries in the quote-unquote Middle East, yeah, the intelligence operatives would be right there at the door waiting for us to exit, and then we'd be on our way to prison. Yeah, that's if they don't, you know, contrive some excuse to get rid of you altogether. So there is a degree of liberty in this country that offers us the freedom to express our future plans. So if we have a future plan, and Muslims should have a future plan because it's for the betterment of humanity, not only the American society, but all of humanity. If they offer us this liberty, well, what's wrong with what's? Are we crippled psychologically? We can't express ourselves, say this is what Islam has to offer, but we haven't worked on a program. Do we have, as Muslims in the United States, do we have, you know, right now we're in election. This is high time election season. You hear the Democrats, the Republicans, the Libertarians, the Green Party, everyone. Why don't Muslims, why can't we contribute? What are the issues that they raise? They raise the issues of unemployment. They raise the issue of undocumented workers in the United States. Insurance for those who don't have it. Education, to go to college without, you know, being financially burdened with the loan that comes with it after you graduate. What is the Islamic answer to the questions that are being presented? That's why I said from the beginning, our enemy is our ignorance. I can't repeat this enough. When we say we, who is we? We have not constituted a we yet. I mean, the truth hurts, but this is the fact. We don't have a we. We have a collection of individuals. That's not a we. A we is when we speak, they listen. Because they know we are quantity and we are quality at the same time. But when we're not like that, no one's going to listen. So, like my brother Ali said, yeah, if you know, we are in the system. We're not operating on Mars somewhere. There are laws and regulations in this country. And we follow those laws and regulations. And probably if there was an honest statistic out there, we'd find that the Muslims are the most law-abiding citizens and legal immigrants of this country. But we don't even have one institution to count. Forget about, you know, the details of our records. To count how many Muslims are in the United States. We can't count ourselves. And we say that we are we? Let's be a little cautious with our words. That's number one. Number two, the liberty that's afforded here is that you can put, you can go and register a political party. Why haven't Muslims gone out there and registered for a political party? On par with the other, we're not going to be like the Democrats and Republicans, obviously, but we'll be out there maybe like, you know, the Green Party and, you know, these other tertiary parties. Well, that's a beginning, but at least we're doing something and we're contributing to the dialogue, to the discussion, the public mind that's out there. So if we have the liberty to do that, we don't do it, let's look at ourselves and say, well, you know, it's not the fault of the system, it's that we are at fault. And I can give a prime example in Washington, D.C. A few of us are from Washington, D.C. We've been praying in front of that Saudi Wahhabi-controlled Islamic center. Where are you claiming that you're of the followers of an Imam al-Hussein? Especially those of you who live in Washington, D.C. Now that Saudi Arabia is the twin of Israel, where are you? Not to be seen. The American government, the American legal system, the American law enforcement agents, they're not telling us you can't pray here in the street. We're praying in the street, but where's everyone else? There is no everyone else because we don't have a we. For over 33 years now, this is a hujja on those who claim that ba, ba, ba. This is not a matter of, you know, theatrics. This is real life. Where are you in real life? When you are counted to be there, you're absent. So who's at fault? Is it the system that offers us the liberty to express ourselves? Or is it us who hide behind traditions and cultures and customs and these things? And so the question bounces back to you.
Yes. Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, Ramanai Rahma.
Just a comment? Just one comment. All right, guys. He was doing one comment, you know? Only comments, no questions, because we're out of time. We have to be back here in 5 minutes.
I've been in the United States since 1976. And before the Islamic revolution, we had a lot of groups, we have a lot of communication. We were building the community at that point. And we did what we could do for Islamic Republic. You are here today, and you are here in Dearborn, Michigan, which is the most concentrated Muslim in this town. What are they? I rest my question.
At the Sky Lounge. All right, just one more. Wait, make a comment.
That's fine.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad and Brother Ali. May Allah bless you. I have a problem with the Muslim Congress. We have, God bless them, good ulamas and mediocre ulamas, and I'm sorry, nonsense ulamas. They're supposed to lead us. They are coming and burying us under the philosophy, Irfan. That's the reason, where are we? We are buried under the Irfan and philosophy. Next time, inshallah, Muslim Congress have this Congress in front of the White House. And then we show our thousands of us pray there and denounce their CIA and Mossad and this and that. Yeah. We have to have a courage and show us that we are. Jazakallah.
Thank you.
All right, brother, listen, you know, because we are completely out of time right now, you know, and we'll have the closing inshallah ceremony. But again, it goes to show that, listen, you know, we have freedom of speech in America and we have freedom of speech at Muslim Congress. All right, point taken, you know, don't worry about it, you know, and hey, listen, everyone, you know, needs to express themselves, and we are okay with that, and we are fine with that, and it's good that we do that, and we do it in a healthy way in order that we can improve all of ourselves, right? So again, the idea, we hope, I'm going to call this to a close right now because we are way behind right now. This is the only one. All the rest of the workshops are done. So inshallah, if you all can make it, you know, to the snacks, and we will be back for the closing ceremony. I thank Muhammad Al-Asi, you know, Imam Asi, and also Haj Ali Barakat for being here. Send a loud salawat for their prosperity and health.